Connecting sleep to sports isn't easy, but here goes. Mattress Firm is America's neighborhood mattress store, and it should be your goal to check out the deals they have going on every day. Their mattresses are softer than your rival team's defense. They get a 10 out of 10. You'll love your new bed. Okay, all terrible dad jokes aside, head to mattressfirm.com/podcast and stretch your budget further than a gymnast before a floor routine. It's part two of the free agency special. We're looking at how the Jets are set up after a series of big moves over the past week, whether the Patriots should be wringing their hands after a couple of key players get away, plus the Giants finally shore up their O-line, Tennessee loads up at corner with Malcolm Butler, and what Tyrann Mathieu brings to the Texans, all of that and so much more on the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. This is Free Agency Special Part 2, kind of like Gary Glitter's Rock and Roll Part 2, but not so much with the horrible things that Gary Glitter did over the course of his life. Andy, we got a lot more guys to talk about here.
And I'm not supposed to know who that is, am I?
Gary Glitter? You don't know who Gary Glitter is?
No. I thought you were referring to like a weird part of yourself in third person for a second.
It was genuine outrage at first, and then as soon as the word started coming out of my mouth, it was kind of like, oh, of course Andy doesn't know who Gary Glitter is. You can ask Jeeves about that and read about the things he did. You do know his song. He did the na 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 na. Hey, that's his song.
You know what's amazing is I spent 20 minutes last night Googling all the na-na-na-na-na songs out there because there's one in particular that I don't know the name of that I'm trying to find. And it's I don't want to sing it now. But if anybody, it goes na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Anybody can send me that. I don't know the name of it.
I believe that is Land of a Thousand Dances, and I can't remember who wrote it.
Okay. Well, that I'll text you next time. I did that last night, and that's how I knew I need to get back to work today.
Okay, I think Wilson Pickett, Land of a Thousand Dances. I believe that's what it is, but you can confirm that
Unbelievable.
Later.
Unbelievable.
That'll be the cliffhanger for next show.
Okay.
That's a great nun in a song, though.
You're going to hear it in the background in a second because I'm Googling it as we go. And I know this is not the way to begin a podcast, so you better just do what you were going to say or whatever we're going into first.
All right.
And well, I'm ready to go.
This is actually – and I want to explain what we're going to do first. First of all, we're just going to talk about a lot of free agents and the guys who have signed, what we like, what we didn't like. And we're starting with the AFC East, and we're going to do As the Patriots Turn here, which is probably the big headline since our last show. And if you want to – was that it, Andy?
We don't know yet. It's an ad.
If you want to get some of the early signings and our takes on them, you can certainly go back one show and listen to all of that. But I had specifically promised last show we would talk about the Dolphins. I said it at the top of the show, and then we just didn't talk about the Dolphins. So I actually want to start with the Dolphins because, not the highest Q rating team, but this is a team undergoing just seismic changes right now. They are really tearing it all down, and I believe the generalities being thrown out there by people in that building are they're changing the culture. They are getting rid of a bunch of dudes and bringing in a bunch of new dudes. Sue is obviously the big one, and Ndamukong Suh is gone. That was really more financially related than anything we've heard about culture-wise with him. He's still a very talented player, and he's still available at this very moment. But also Mike Pouncey gone, Lawrence Timmons, which that was probably a regrettable signing by both Timmons and the team last year, mm-hmm. as far as we know. But the Dolphins brought in Danny Amendola, Albert Wilson, two number three type receivers, I think you'd call them, and they added Josh Sitton to the offensive line, and they got Daniel Kilgore from San Francisco. So changes coming there in Miami, and I guess it's kind of due. I mean, they still, maybe Tannehill is their long-term guy at quarterback. It seems like they're probably going to try and go after one in the draft, but it seems like they are just sort of hitting the reset button.
Yeah, and by real quick, you're right.
Yes.
Can you hear that? Okay. here's what all of these moves by Miami say, on at least on offense. We can talk about the Sue decision in a minute. And you're right, though. It's financial, and that's probably the extent of it. Adam Gase is basically declaring, hey, you know what? My offense works, and I can get the play designs to work. Just give me some guys that are going to be where they need to be. They don't need to be stars. They don't need to be difference makers. Just give me guys that do the task. Give me some linemen who block. Give me some receivers who run routes. Albert Wilson, not a dynamic guy, but very good within the context of a scheme. He'll get from A to B the way you tell him to. That was not always the case with Landry, by the way. Even though he's a dynamic guy, a really good player, you didn't always know what you're getting there. They're going at Danny Amendola. You know what you're getting with these guys. And I think it's Adam Gase doubling down on himself, saying, I can coach these guys to get open. It's all about winning with design. Let's just get some guys who know what they're doing.
And it was an offensive line that was kind of in crisis a little bit last year. So they brought in new guys. I mean, Josh Sitton was a very good player a couple years ago. In your mind, what does he have left at this point?
Depends what you're asking him to do, because he is not, and I'm not sure this is a great fit, to be honest with you, because he's not a tremendous on-the-move blocker. Mm-hmm. He is better as a one-on-one blocker. He can work in an outside zone scheme the way Miami's does, but he's not comfortable going left and right equally. He has preferences in how he plays. He made that comment about how switching sides is a big deal. You know, we'll clean it up a little. Well, we don't need to clean it up, do we? I thought it was a great analogy what he said. Did you not hear what he said?
What? No. What did he say?
He said switching from left side to right side as a lineman is like going to the bathroom and wiping with the opposite hand.
Okay. That's a good analogy.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's also my nightmare is breaking my right hand, because I don't think I could do it with my left. So that's a very good analogy.
And the guys will tell you that. Maybe not exactly like that, but it's a big deal to switch sides. Josh Sitton has told me directly, I think it was, he said, I'm more comfortable moving to my right than my left. It was a few years ago he said this. It was one of the two. But the point is, Sitton is a very specific type of player. And so how you plug him in and how you employ him, that's going to mean something, and that's going to matter. Kilgore, as far as that goes, you know, he's such an athletic downgrade from Pouncey. And the one thing that gives you pause is Miami does a lot with their screen game, especially wide receiver screens. And maybe with Landry being gone, they'll do less of it now. I would imagine they'll continue to do it, though Kenny Stills is still good on screens. They even will throw it to Devontae Parker at times. When you have an athletic center, that can help your screen game quite a bit. But these wide receiver screens, that gets more to your offensive tackles, which is one reason they liked Laramie Tunsil out at left tackle. They wanted to get more athletic at that position for the screen game. But just something to keep in mind is Gase wants guys that can just line up and play, but he does not have as much talent now to work with, at least up front, as he did. Let's call it athleticism, as he did last year with these offensive linemen. So he has traded athleticism for reliability. He's going to have to give up a little bit of his screen game as part of that transaction.
Is that problematic for you?
Yes and no. Yes, in that they're not going to have the quarterback they want. Peyton, the next Peyton Manning for Gase is not just sitting out there right now, not for 2018. So you do have to win by design a little bit. But I would imagine they wouldn't sign off on these moves if they were a huge deal. If Mike Pouncey's contract was not out of control. I remember when you and I went through, Gary, and examined who might be the cap casualties issue. We did this on our own. We didn't do this on the podcast. I can't remember if we included Pouncey on our list or not. I certainly remember considering him. I don't think I included him. So
I don't think
he
was.
Okay, so his contract was not outrageous, which tells you that if they thought he was a difference maker, or if they thought what he brought to the screen game or any of the perimeter stuff were a big deal, they probably would have retained him. Remember, though, the Niners run an outside zone game, and they had re-signed Daniel Kilgore for a decent, respectable, lower-end starter contract. That was before they realized they could get Weston Richburg, and that's why they made this trade, of course. They basically gave him away to Miami after realizing they can get Richburg. But the Niners wanted Kilgore back in a similar scheme. So I would imagine he fits what you want to do athletically. I would think they'll be comfortable with him. He's not Mike Pouncey, though.
Yeah. Well, let's move on in the AFC East here. And by the way, yeah, Andy, we can talk about that analogy. We can talk about poop and butts and stuff like that, and still keep our clean designation on iTunes, I believe. I guess we'll find out. But let's go on to the Jets, who probably made the most noise since our last show. And it starts with, well, let's talk about the trade real quick. They traded up from number 6 to number 3, gave a whole bunch of second round choices to the Colts in a deal that, I don't know, everyone wants to declare great trade for the Colts, and it was a great trade for the Colts, but it's kind of also something the Jets had to do. There's a big four, a consensus big four in this year's draft. The Jets, as Albert Breer pointed out in his column about it on Saturday, the Jets are very familiar with these guys. They got a head start on scouting all of them. They thought they had the worst team in football going to 2017. Turns out they were a little bit better than that, but they got a head start on it was the four: Allen, Rosen, Darnold, and whom I forget, Mayfield. And then on top of that, they went deep in Lamar Jackson and Luke Falk out in Washington State. So they know these quarterback prospects. They're apparently comfortable with getting whoever the third guy would be in that group. Browns are going to take one at 1. Giants are the question mark right now. And then the Jets will obviously take one at 3. So they'll get their quarterback of the future. They like their quarterback room with the two veterans, McCown and Bridgewater, there. And we'll see how it plays out. But in the meantime, basically, the money they were going to spend on Kirk Cousins and didn't go to Kirk Cousins, they spent to get Isaiah Crowell, Trumaine Johnson, Avery Williamson, and Spencer Long. I would think Trumaine Johnson is a really nice addition, especially for a team that's been hurting at cornerback, really, it seems like, ever since Darrell Revis moved on. But, they've shored up that secondary pretty good with Johnson. Crowell, good piece. Williamson, sort of a younger DeMario Davis, maybe, and Spencer Long, a nice piece on what's not a very good offensive line coming back.
Well, that's another athletic center. We just, that's kind of the theme of the show so far. Spencer Long, I think he's one of the, we talked about Pouncey and now Spencer Long. We're only two topics into the show. I think Spencer Long is one of the 10 or 12 most athletic centers in the NFL, maybe even top 8 or so. I really liked him in Washington. The Johnson move allows Claiborne to now be your number 2 corner as well. They re-signed him for 1 year, $7 million, if I recall. Does that sound right to you, Gary?
That does sound right, yep.
And then Crowell solidifies the backfield, probably rejuvenates a little bit. They've really acquired a handful of starters here. I think all these guys we've listed are Avery Williamson, certainly. He was a 3-down linebacker in Tennessee. He's going to be an upgrade over DeMario Davis.
Yeah.
I think they not only added 4 starters, but they got better at all 4 spots here.
No, I thought it was nice work. And it's, I mean, look, they wanted Kirk Cousins. They missed out. But they kind of had
what was... They got lucky on that, by the way.
It's like Kirk Cousins went from plan A. I'm going to mess this up. Kirk Cousins was their plan A once the offseason came along, when they ended up falling out of the top 5 of the draft, and then they went back to plan B, which was actually their original plan A, which is coming up and getting one of these draft quarterbacks. So kind of worked out nicely for the Jets at this point. And they did. They got 4 quality players here.
Yeah, because if I'm in their position, I would want McCown at $10 million versus Cousins at $30 million. Especially since I can get out of the McCown deal, is not going to tie you up for many years. I mean, it's a year-to-year deal. And let's remember what Cousins is. He's a plug-in guy. He's not the guy you want to build around, and he would have been the guy the Jets were building around. So they avoided this one. Here's the question, though, Gary, because they're trading up to number 3. If they're really that in love with these top 3 quarterbacks, whoever they think they'll get at 3, then why would they want Cousins that badly?
It's a good question, Andy. I don't have a good answer for you.
I'm going to tweet it. I just thought it's snarky enough to tweet. Do you agree?
I guess. I don't tweet anything, though.
It feels like a team that doesn't have, I want to say they don't have a plan. That's harsh. But the idea of Cousins is our top of our list, but now we like whoever we'll get at 3. Those those go against each other. And I think the Colts won the trade, getting the number six pick and then all those second rounders.
Yeah.
These were the two neediest teams in the NFL. These are the two worst rosters in the AFC. And I don't know about the Jets. I mean, if they have a QB they love, that's fine. But they wouldn't have had one they loved if they loved Cousins that much.
Well, what we know about Woody Johnson and his run of ownership here is he has been desperate to get the franchise QB. So Cousins at least guarantees you, you know, he's above that baseline of franchise QB. He might not have been the right franchise QB, but he would have been a guy who, you know, build up enough around him, you're a playoff contender now. And I think that is sort of where the, I don't know, that was sort of the target for this team over the last couple of years. So maybe they're not viewing any of these quarterbacks as stars, but they see three of them that'll probably be pretty good in the league.
You don't want to let your owner be making these decisions. And we've heard the name Woody Johnson come up in these conversations for the last 15 months or so. And that's almost never a good thing when the owner has a preference.
If you were out here in New York, you would hear it a lot more over the last two or three years here.
Well, and we don't hear it in January because the Jets don't play in January right now.
They do not. This got really dark on the Jets. We were really happy about them, and now we're really.
Well, you gotta have a plan at quarterback, and it looks like they've got two very different, very expensive plans.
I'll just say this about quarterbacks in general, and we've talked about quarterbacks plenty on this show over the last couple of years, but you know, how many stories can you look at in the NFL where a team settles for a quarterback and it ends up being a super, you know, the Cowboys missing out on Connor Cook and then they get Dak Prescott and they're, you know, they settle for Dak Prescott and they end up getting a much better player. Or, you know, the Eagles came up and said, we'll take Goff or Wentz, and you know, they're both fine players, but you know, if you're going to redo that draft, Carson Wentz is your number one overall pick. So I don't know.
So
I don't want to jump down their throats. They've got a chance to get a quality quarterback in there, and I think that's a good thing for this franchise.
Your Carson Wentz, Jared Goff, Eagles argument's a good one. That would be the winning argument if you're taking the Jets side.
No,
that's a great point. But I'm not. It's also a great point that they wouldn't have gone after Cousins if they really loved these guys.
Yes, that is a good point. I would never tell you to tweet anything because I don't think anyone
I've already tweeted
it. Ever.
You don't think about these things. You just send them out.
Okay.
I tweeted it while you were talking. But I listened to you. I've been doing. I got to put my stuff away while we're talking here. I'm doing too much on the phone, too much on the iPad right now.
You're looking up songs. When we got on the Andy, just so everyone knows, Andy was giggling to himself as we were doing a sound check today with Shelby Royston, our producer. And I was like, Andy, what's so funny? And he was like, I'm reading Onion headlines. I was in show mode.
You're right. I'm being exposed here. You guys just talk for like two or three minutes about nuts and bolts before the show. The ad reads don't really apply to me.
Yeah, I guess so. All right, let's talk.
But you're right.
Let's talk
you're right. I need to dial in. You're right.
Let's talk about the team that's really getting bummed out by that Jets trade up, and that is the Bills. The Bills might be a little bit worried. Again, all these teams are still doing their homework on the quarterback. So the Jets are ahead of the game because of all the work they did over the course of last season. A lot of teams are playing catch-up right now, if you're going to look at it that way. So the Bills, you know, they were moving into position to make the jump up, and the Giants pick might be available. Obviously, it will presumably cost more than what the Jets paid for the Colts pick. So, yeah, the Bills have some work to do here. In the meantime, they signed A.J. McCarron, who we talked a couple weeks ago. We were like, A.J. McCarron's just a backup. And apparently 32 teams felt the same way because it looks like A.J. McCarron is, he might be a short-term bridge guy in Buffalo, but I don't think they're making any sort of long-term plans around him. So A.J. McCarron, going to be a backup, might start some games early.
Yeah, and I think that's the right move. That's a good situation. And it's the best opportunity McCarron could score. The Bills probably are not done. Are you surprised that so many people have reacted strongly to the Trent Murphy signing.
Have they?
I got the sense they were.
I'm and surprised I don't think that Trent you go ahead, Andy, and then I'll talk about Trent Murphy for a while.
Well, I don't think he's a great scheme fit in a 4-3. The Bucs were going after him, too, and that really got my attention. Trent Murphy's not a defensive tackle or a defensive end. He's basically Jarrett Johnson, a hybrid 3-4 flex type of guy who can line up in different spots for you, but he's not the type of skill set or athletic demeanor to just line up in the same spot and beat a guy over the course of 50, 60 snaps. That's not his game. So I didn't quite understand that sign. I don't love that move. I'm fond of what Buffalo's done otherwise.
I think the combination of draft pedigree and the fact that the Patriots were linked to him, I think sort of got some imaginations going with Trent Murphy, who I think is fine. I mean, I think he's above the baseline of number two pass rusher in the NFL. I'd stick him out there, and he'll get some sort of second effort type of sacks, and that's okay.
I don't think you're higher in his pass rushing than I am. Patriots run a totally different type of scheme than Buffalo and Tampa Bay, by the way. He would be the Rob Ninkovich, Shay McClellan type of guy in that scheme, and probably more the Ninkovich type. But we're talking apples and oranges at this point schematically.
Yeah. Well, we're going to see what he is.
Let's ask this.
Buffalo.
Where will he play in Buffalo? It's third down and 10. Where is he lining up?
On the sideline?
you put
him inside. You probably keep one of those two tackles, whoever needs to spell at that point between Olotolele and Kyle Williams, and play Murphy inside.
So Shaq Lawson remains a defensive end then?
Yes.
Be Shaq Lawson and Jerry Hughes as your other defensive, and there's also Lorenzo Alexander, who some teams loved when they played against him this year, and I thought he was very good 2 years ago. I think Shaq Lawson's a three technique on third down. I think Murphy's a first and second down player. Starlo Tulele's probably a first and second down player, occasional third down snaps. The Bills have defensive line depth, but they don't have a lot of pass rushing talent still, which was the case with their roster last year, too. Just natural edge rushing talent. Now, they can blitz, they can scheme. You know, they'll be able to compete, but Buffalo, this defense is not drastically different than it was a year ago.
Yeah.
It's a little bit better, but it's the same identity as a year ago. Maybe that's exactly what they wanted. I think they need another edge rusher, though.
No, and look, edge rushers were not available this year. I mean, there just weren't any until a guy we're going to talk about in a little bit, maybe. But Vinnie Curry's not a pure speed guy off the edge. There's just those guys don't get to market. So you get him in the draft, and you got to spend a high draft pick on him, or you just don't get him. That's kind of where we're at.
That doesn't mean you go out and sign one who's not and hope he is in Trent Murphy. And I think Vinnie Curry's three times the edge rusher that Trent Murphy is, if we're talking off the edge. But I agree with you, Curry is not a pure edge bender either. He's not a Jerry Hughes type, for example.
Yeah.
But Vinnie Curry would have been a much bigger, better addition than Trent Murphy. The Buccaneers got away like bandits on this one, getting Curry and losing out on Trent Murphy.
Yeah. Well, let's, as long as we're talking about the Bucs, let's talk about the Bucs right now. Because I think the Bucs had... I think the Bucs and Texans had my two favorite free agency periods because I think neither of them spent insane money, and yet they addressed a bunch of positions that needed to be addressed. And like I said, their edge guys just aren't available. Quality edge guys aren't available in free agency. And this year in the draft, there really only happens to be, you got Bradley Chubb, and then you're jumping down to like the Marcus Davenport, Harold Landry developmental guys. You really didn't have a chance to get him, and then Vinnie Curry came on the market, and the Bucs jumped on him, and that was, I mean, this was a glaring need for this team.
Oh, big time. This was the reason the Buccaneers underachieved in 2017, and it was almost only this reason. They had a lot of other problems, but the problems almost completely derived from a lack of pass rush. They were all symptoms of a team that can't rush the passer, and if you're going to be a straight 4-3 zone defense, which Tampa Bay, they fit that profile to a purer degree than any other team in the NFL. If you're going to play that way, then you have to impact the passer with your down four. And they didn't have a single – when Noah Spence was out last year, which was much of the season, after that they didn't have a single guy who could get to the quarterback other than Gerald McCoy. And Vinny Curry changes that. He's a guy who can get to the QB. You put Noah Spence back in the equation – at least they can breathe again. It's still not a dynamic pass rush, and as you said, those guys aren't available this year unless you're going to trade. You're not going to get a big-time edge rusher. But fortunately for them, they were able to do something where they can at least be competitive on defense.
Yeah, yeah, and they brought in Bo Allen as well, so kind of taking a lot of ex-Eagles here. But if you're going to take players from a team, do it from the Super Bowl chance, I suppose.
I would love, the first time I saw Bo Allen in a locker room, I thought I would love to just take him out shirtless and put him on the street and see how many people would guess he's an NFL player. Because
yeah,
he does not at all look like an NFL player. He's got one of the best bad bodies I've ever seen.
Yeah, he and Jarrell Casey can do some sort of bad body fashion show for the NFL.
You know who else has a bad body who's I thought was a really good player last year? Is Matt Longacre for the Rams.
Okay.
He doesn't have a bad body. It's more like people say dad bod now. That's a little too harsh on him. But he's not a chiseled athlete. He's more country boy looking than.
Yeah.
But he's this guy that can get after the quarterback from the outside.
Well, there you go. Bo Allen and Ryan Jensen, both to the Bucks. So that's a lot of curly mullet type of guys going there. And if you read Peter King's column, his Monday column that came out March 19th here, a lot of teams interested in Ryan Jensen. They were checking in on him. Chiefs checked in, Colts checked in, a couple teams checked in. So Bucks sort of won something of a battle for Ryan Jensen here.
Yeah, well, he was very good as the Ravens center last season. He's gotten a lot better over the course of his career, and the Buccaneers had this need in the interior offensive line. They were moving Ali Marpet along or around to guard mm-hmm. the center, and now he's, you know, he was all over different positions, and then they've kind of been rotating at left guard as well, so they were unstable at that spot. So hopefully this settles things down for them. Now they have J.R. Sweezy at right guard, Marpet at center. Pam File was at left guard as a free agent coming in. Let's assume they don't re-sign Pam File. So now it's Sweezy, it's Marpet, and then Jensen's of center. That's a much better interior offensive line as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, Bucks and Texans, those are your off-season champions. Andy, before we move on, you know, some new hires by the Bucks here. And speaking of which, every business needs great people and a better way to find them. Something better than posting your job online and just praying for the right people to see it. ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply for your job. These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive, so you never miss a great match. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. Right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/things. That's ZipRecruiter.com/THINGS. ZipRecruiter.com/things. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, we're going to talk some Giants in a moment, but before we get to that, Andy, mailbag show next week. Probably the usual Monday publish as well.
Yeah, love it. I love the mailbag shows.
So send them in, but probably a lot of free agency stuff. But as always, just send in whatever questions you might have. You know, sometimes the weirder the better. Not all the time, but sometimes. So send those in. You can email them to talkback@themmqb.com. Just make sure you put podcast somewhere in the subject line so we can find it. Or you can get us on Twitter, Andy_Benoit, GGrambling_SI, or we're both on Facebook if you want to get us there. So send those in. We will have a big mailbag show if there's any breaking news that happens in next week, which there probably will be. We'll talk about it at the top, but then we'll have all mailbag. But let's talk New York Giants. And this was One of the big ones, the Giants wanted to address their offensive line this offseason. Dave Gettleman, that's what he's been talking about. They lost Weston Richburg. They missed out on Andrew Norwell, but they ended up landing Nate Solder, who, I mean, look, they're going to move Eric Flowers off of left tackle, so that's a plus, and maybe Flowers ends up being a little more comfortable somewhere else on the line. But Solder just gives them, you know, we talked about the Vikings last year and how you just want to be above a certain level of capability at your tackle spots in order to function as an offense. And Solder certainly brings them up above that level, even if Flowers was not quite the, dumpster fire that he was in 2016 or so.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. So they make the huge investment in an offensive tackle 1 year after Eric Flowers finally stabilizes. Because he wasn't, you're right, he was not a dumpster fire last year. He wasn't amazing, but Eli Manning was not under siege from the left side snap after snap. And yet Flowers is going to get moved, and his chance to stay in the NFL will be at right tackle. He's not a guard. He's not going to play. They might try him at guard. He's not going to have a lot of success there. His body type just doesn't fit the position at all. Mm-hmm. So maybe he can be your right tackle, but it's interesting that they would make this decision. Now, what they could be thinking is that maybe they're looking ahead to next year's market and seeing who's going to be available on free agency, and Flowers is in his contract year, and we don't want to have to sign him to a second year or a second deal. He's not going to be worth that to us. So let's go ahead and take Solder now. We know we're ready to win anyway, even though we're drafting second overall. I understand why they did this. Remember, these left tackles, though, they're basically very expensive insurance policies.
Yeah.
And if this had been the Ben McAdoo scheme, I would have raised an eyebrow, because why pay for an insurance policy if you're getting the ball out on three-step, or in McAdoo's case, two- and four-step timing? But it's the Pat Shurmur scheme, which is a little bit different. Still quick game, a lot of quick game. But they didn't want to mess around with it any further, I guess.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, look, the results for Flowers were pretty okay last year. I don't know how much they trusted that going forward. It's certainly, if
good
nothing
point.
Else, you can understand that's not a beautiful brand of football he is playing, and maybe you don't feel great about that.
Great point. Yeah, you got to trust the process, and you believe what your eyes show you from the film, and there's no way you look at Eric Flowers' film, even when the blocks are not getting beat, you don't look at it and say, boy, I feel great about having that out there on our quarterback's blind side. His technique just isn't where it needs to be, so it's entirely possible that a new regime would come in and say, holy cow, we're not going with that. We're not playing with that at left tackle.
Yep. Yeah, Giants also add Jonathan Stewart, who should probably be a quality number two back. We'll see if they get that number one in the draft or what they do there. And they move on from Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, and they're obviously, things happened in that secondary last year, and they're shuffling some things up. But I thought he was a guy worth hanging on to. And again, you don't know what happens in the locker room and behind the scenes, and he's obviously an older player as well. But I think he's still pretty useful out there.
I didn't think he was bad a year ago.
I like the flexibility.
Yeah, that's I do too. He became more of a he was a safety/linebacker at times in some of their really deep sub packages. I want to say it was even their 7DB sub package. I don't know if he did it in dime or not. I'd have to check, but he did play multiple positions for them, and he has experience outside and he has experience in the slot. I could have understood hanging on to him. What was his, do you remember what his salary was?
Well, yeah, it wasn't, I mean, it wasn't crazy money. He was going to have an $8.5 million cap hit here. And they'll save $6.5 by cutting him. So, you know,
I can
everyone
understand
sort of,
it.
Everyone scrambles to free up that money too once they start spending on the new guys. So,
yeah, I understand. That's a little bit hefty for a sub-package corner who you believe could be on the verge of decline.
Yeah. Let's go more expatriates here. The Titans making a couple big moves here. Malcolm Butler lands in Tennessee. They also bring in Deion Lewis. Let's start with Butler, though. The Titans have three pretty promising corners here. I'm not sure if I buy any of them as true number ones. I like Adoree Jackson, the second year guy. he's fast. And Malcolm Butler is another guy who can match up with the smaller, quicker guys. And then you got Logan Ryan, offers a little more size there, even if he isn't listed measurement as significantly bigger. But it's a nice three-corner group they have now.
Oh, it's a very nice three-corner group, because those first two, the guys from last year who they made big investments in, Logan Ryan, another expatriate, they signed him to a big deal in free agency a year ago. And then Adoree Jackson's their first-round pick last year. Those guys can both play the slot if need be. And Ryan is certainly the more natural or, and obviously experienced slot player of those two, but Jackson got some reps there at times. I voted Ryan first-team All-Pro as my slot guy. I really liked him a year ago. They've got three guys now who can match up with any type of receiver anywhere on the field. Now, not all of them can do that, but between them, they've got every brand of wide receiver covered.
And speaking of every brand covered, Deion Lewis. So Deion Lewis in New England was almost like the early down workhorse guy when you compared him to Rex Burkhead and James White. He was the guy who was kind of not the passing back, let's say. And in Tennessee, he becomes the obvious guy you'd want on the field. Derrick Henry will presumably do a lot of early down work, and then they have Lewis to spell him on early downs and basically be the primary third down guy.
And remember, Lewis was very good in that capacity before he had his big knee injury. They were talking about him as the next Danny Woodhead in New England. This was years ago. And Matt LaFleur is going to make use of that. LaFleur was under Shanahan in Atlanta, and Shanahan knows how to flex your running backs out into the formation and use them as receivers. I'm sure LaFleur will do that with Deion Lewis. I'm sure they felt Lewis could answer that call. I would not be shocked if Lewis eventually, or if he takes some carries away from Derrick Henry. I like Derrick Henry a lot. But Derrick Henry needs the blocking to define his running lane for him. He needs the first 2 or 3 yards of his runs to be totally clean in order to be what he can fully be. That's not necessarily true. Lewis is a little bit dependent on blocking. He's not Le'Veon Bell or someone that can just create out of nowhere. But he's a little quicker. He's got better short area movement ability. And I imagine he's a better improvised runner than Henry would be. They're both, and especially Lewis, actually, they're both very good at setting up and using their blocks.
Yeah. And Titans retain Josh Klein, who had been a free agent, and they also release Sylvester Williams on the other side of the ball. But, that team, so much of what they do is going to come down to Marcus Mariota's development, obviously. They're building up a nice team around him. Good things in Tennessee. Suddenly a tough division, too. But we talked about some expatriates here, and let's talk about the guys who are new Patriots. New England goes out and gets Jason McCourty, finally reuniting the McCourty twins in New England. And I want to talk about Jason McCourty for a little bit because, he was sort of the folks who like to champion Sashi Brown, like maybe Andy Benoit. A lot of them pointed to Jason McCourty as what a great addition. Look, they got a number one corner in Jason McCourty. Look at his grades. Look at his interceptions this year. This is a number one corner, and I don't know. He's fine. I think he's actually not a bad fit as your number two guy across from Stephon Gilmore, but I don't think anyone's throwing a parade about Jason McCourty.
Were you slandering me back there? Or did you imply that I'm an analytics guy?
Yeah. That was the most stunning conversation I think I ever had with you when we talked Sashi Brown a couple weeks ago in the mailbag show.
Because I was kind of supportive of him?
Yeah, you were mildly supportive, and that was enough for me to brand you as the biggest Sashi Brown apologist in the history of the world.
Well, Sashi Brown accumulated a lot of money and a lot of draft picks, and that's how teams have been using analytics for years. I haven't heard of the Browns using analytics to evaluate players. I'm not saying they don't. Mm-hmm. I did hear of one team that, I'll tell you off the air, because it was kind of an off-the-record thing. There's one team in the league, though, that uses the PFF grades at the front of contract negotiations, and agents just look at it like, what? Really? Really? Are you doing that? Okay. I don't mind McCourty to New England, though. Either McCourty. I like Devin, obviously, and Jason's fine. He's not a number one. That was apparent on film. They tried to use him that way in Cleveland, and he just wasn't up to answering that anymore. He used to be that for a little while in Tennessee and at the height, but that was a short-lived height of his career that he had. He's still a quality perimeter guy. I don't know if he's I don't know how solid he is as your number two either, though.
Yeah.
Let's look at it this way. If when they face the Steelers, who does Gilmore guard and who does McCourty guard? Because last year the answer was clear. Butler takes Antonio Brown, and Gilmore takes Martavis Bryant or Juju Smith-Schuster. Who takes Antonio Brown now when you play him?
Boy, I guess it's McCourty, and then you just have a ton of safety help over there. Yeah,
yeah,
that's not good when you put it that way.
Well, and then the third corner is Eric Rowe, who's real. I mean, they've got a bunch of long, stocky cornerbacks now. They really don't have a twitchy, undersized, let's call her twitchy, quick mover. Let's say that. Maybe they feel. Remember, they drafted Cyrus Jones last year, 5'10", 197. I don't know anything about him because he wasn't on the field much as a rookie. He was their second-round pick. That was actually 2016, not 17. So
yeah, he tore his ACL last year. I believe it was an ACL.
I don't know how much they're banking on him. New England, can we agree on this, Gary? New England downgraded at corner if they're replacing Malcolm Butler with Jason McCourty.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, it seems especially problematic. And it turns out I'm probably a little bit higher on Jason McCourty than you are, but they still, you know, it's not like they added pass rushers. It's not like they've said, okay, well, let's put the money up here and let's really overwhelm with the pass rush. I mean, they added Danny Shelton up front. That's about it. So now it looks like you have
Adrian Claiborne as well.
And Adrian Claiborne, sorry.
He's not facing who's our buddy in Dallas, Byron Bell.
Well, no, it was poor Chaz Green in that game.
Chaz Green, that's right. Bell came in at the end of that game, though, didn't he? Bell who replaced? Yeah. So, but New England's never prioritized edge rushers. They want guys that are going to stay in their pass rush lane and clog the gaps and make you have to play on third down and long often. They want running down defensive linemen, and they'll live with the results. And it's worked out well for them. So, I think Shelton's a good move for them, by the way. Nobody's talking about the Danny Shelton. I like Danny Shelton quite a bit.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Light feet for a big guy. He's a poor man's Don Terry Poe.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. It's, you know, you still have sort of a C-minus pass rush, and now all of a sudden you don't have the A-plus cornerback play to make up for it. So, at this point, I guess that's a draft need. That's something you address on draft day for them, but we're going to find out in a couple weeks, I guess.
Here's what we know on draft day. New England's going to trade down a whole bunch, and they're going to get branded geniuses for doing so.
it's the Sashi Brown way. I mean,
there you go.
That was the conversation. Everyone does that. Everyone tries to trade down these days. Not literally everyone, but most teams. It's old stuff. But the Patriots also added, they added Jeremy Hill to the backfield. They re-signed Rex Burkhead, so you have plenty of running backs there again, even with Deion Lewis leaving. And they also they traded for Cordarrelle Patterson in the special team stuff, and maybe the occasional gadget play, but probably not so much in New England.
Amendola's gone, but Julian Edelman's coming back healthy, so they probably actually upgrade in that position with Edelman back. Yeah, it's a myth. The idea that, New England's getting gouged in free agency, they're losing all their guys, that's a myth. These are normal transactions that the Patriots are a part of. Guys are leaving. That happens to every team. It's not just a Patriot thing. And, yes, the Patriots are better at adjusting when guys leave. We know that. That's part of their lore. I don't think there's a lot of story in New England this offseason, though. It's not nearly what people are making it out to be.
No, I agree with that. I think cornerback is more problematic than it usually is at this point.
Yes, I would agree with that too. Yeah.
All right. You know, Andy, before we move on, let's get back to Mattress Firm. Let's keep the ball rolling, shall we? Everyone knows how important stretching is before an event. So does Mattress Firm, except it's your dollar. Your budget stretches further when you're shopping at America's Neighborhood Mattress Store. It's a true home run, and you'll have a ball. They're the head coaches when it comes to mattress experience, but know this, they are more than mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed, from adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor. They have you literally and figuratively covered up like your favorite cornerback. Go to mattressfirm.com/podcast to see what deals are happening as I read the sentence to you. They even offer a 120-night sleep trial to ensure perfection and a 120-night low price guarantee, so you know you paid the perfect price. Talk about a 1-2 punch, a knockout, if you will. Score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to get the play-by-play on how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow. All right, Andy, my other favorite team in free agency, like I said, the Texans. No huge contracts coming on the books here. They end up getting Tyrann Mathieu, reportedly on a deal that was less than what the Cardinals were offering him to come back. So 1 year, $7 million. J.J. Watt does the recruiting. Tyrann Mathieu with the Houston Texans. On top of that, you add they added Aaron Colvin. We talked about that last show. And they brought back Jonathan Joseph, who maybe is not quite, effective anymore. But Tyrann Mathieu and Aaron Colvin, those are some nice upgrades to a secondary that was a problem last year.
And Joseph probably is now the number four corner. Kareem Jackson's still there. Kevin Johnson's healthy, first-round pick in 2015, a guy with really good transitional movement skills. And then Colvin, who I believe can play outside on first and second down and then move to the slot on third down. And Kareem Jackson can do the same thing. So it's a deep cornerbacking unit. And then Andre Hall at safety and Tyrann Mathieu both have cornerbacking skills and experience. So now it's also a flexible secondary. A lot of stuff they can do there with Romeo Crennel disguising coverages if he wants to do that. And they've done that over the years. I like this move with Mathieu going to Houston. I like it for all parties involved.
Yeah, and they also got some fairly reasonably priced offensive linemen here, Zach Fulton and Senio Kelemete, coming to Houston. It was a really bad line last year, and now it's
terrible.
It's not superstars coming in, and these guys might be pretty. I don't want to say fungible starters here, but fairly low-level starter guys, let's call them. But that's kind of better than what they've had going in there.
They were playing with backups last year, and they've still got some issues at O-line. They have to get better at offensive tackle still, and I could see them drafting. Theoretically, Gary, they could start two rookies at offensive tackle, depending on who they drafted. I wasn't big on Julian Davenport, their fourth-round pick a year ago. Maybe it's a transition. The NFL was tough, and he'll be better in year two. Derek Newton, he hasn't played in a while due to injuries, and Bruno Giacomini's probably not going to be re-signed, so they have a hole at right tackle. Central Henderson from Buffalo, the guy they acquired, he's not going to fill it. So it's not a great line, but it is better, because we could have gone through four or five positions a year ago and had this conversation. Now we're saying they just have a need at tackle.
Yeah, I mean, the issue at tackle, and this is a better offensive line draft class than has come out in a while. It's not a great one, but it's far better than the one that was last year. They have an issue there. It's funny. Julian Davenport, the guy from Bucknell, and Antonio Garcia, the guy from Troy, who was drafted by the Patriots. Those are sort of the two guys last year that everyone was looking at as there's your developmental left tackles. And I don't know what Davenport's going to be next year, but just backing up to the Patriots a little bit. Garcia, he had something with, I believe it was blood clots last year, and he lost a ton of weight, and he was a guy who played sort of in the 280 range when he was in college, if I remember correctly. And I don't know if he's ready. I don't know exactly what the Patriots can do at left tackle. I mean, obviously, when you have Tom Brady, you can get the ball out. But, those are going to be interesting spots. And those two guys were drafted as developmental guys, and this is kind of where let's say the rubber meets the road a little bit, if I could throw out a meaningless cliche. And those guys are going to have to play. You spent draft picks on them, and then you're going to have to put them out there at some point.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see in a couple of quarterbacks who the offensive line, it matters and it doesn't matter. Deshaun Watson and Tom Brady can overcome deficient O-lines for different reasons. Watson's mm-hmm. got the movement ability, and I think he's going to continue to get better in the pocket, and Brady's the best who's ever been in the pocket. But those are also superstar, top-shelf franchise guys, at least in terms of what they mean to your offense and how you approach the game. So it's imperative that you have them out there. You can't have those guys getting hit a whole lot.
Yeah. And speaking of left tackles, Joe Thomas announces his retirement. The Browns did go out and sign Chris Hubbard, the ex-Steeler, who did a nice job filling in for them last year, but it seems like Hubbard is probably going to be on the right side. I don't know if they fool around with Sean Coleman at left tackle.
I would. Sean Coleman has the body. He has the long arms. He has light feet at times when he's comfortable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was up and down as a rookie, but every rookie's going to be up and down. I really liked him a lot in 2017. I watched him very closely. I saw every snap on film. I liked him a lot more than I disliked him. I thought he started off well and finished pretty strong.
Okay, that's encouraging. It's good to hear.
He's not Joe Thomas. I mean, you know, let's not get carried away. But they have – my guess is they're comfortable transitioning Sean Coleman over to left tackle. I'm sure they would have been more comfortable bringing Thomas back. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I posted this question on Twitter, Gary. And I want you to guess there was one guy that – I got most people answered, at least a guy from my era. I don't know. I had some names from way back when I was like an embryo or something like that. But the guys from my era that most people said, and I disagreed with this, has there been any player in the history of the NFL, probably professional sports, who's been a better great player on a worse team than Joe Thomas?
Yeah, I saw that, and I think I know who you're getting at for the reaction, because I saw a lot of people throw him out, and I do agree. Off the top of my head, I could not think of anyone. I mean, the Browns didn't make the postseason. Not only that, they were very rarely anywhere near postseason contention by midseason in any year when they had Joe Thomas. So they were perennial.
Except his rookie year, they were I think 10-6. But every other year, and he went to the Pro Bowl 10 times.
Oh, that's right, the Derrick Anderson reel. Yep.
Yeah, he went to the Pro Bowl 10 times, 11 years, and they never sniffed the playoffs. And yet, who was the guy that everybody was saying was the best great player on a bad team?
It was Barry Sanders.
Who went to the playoffs 6 times in Detroit. Yeah. 6. He went to the playoffs half of his career.
People forget. I mean, yeah, they didn't play in the Super Bowl. The Lions were a good team for the most part with during the Barry Sanders years, which weren't that many years because he obviously retired early. But
well, and they lost a lot. I think they lost all of those playoff games. The farthest they went was the divisional round, and I don't remember. I don't think they had a bye that year, so they probably won a wild card game, and then were out in the next year. So Barry Sanders, I think, won one postseason game. So I'm not saying he had a successful winning culture around him. But the idea that Barry Sanders was on a worse team than Joe Thomas is factually incorrect on a number of mathematical levels.
Yeah, they Sanders in 91, the Lions had beaten the Cowboys at home in a wild card game, and then they lost in Washington. I believe that was the Eric Kramer era for the Detroit Lions. So, but yeah, Barry Sanders was on some decent teams, not Super Bowl winning teams, but winning teams.
Teams that Joe Thomas would have gladly loved to be a part of.
Yes, absolutely. Carlos Hyde, speaking of great running backs, in the Barry Sanders mold, except not. Here's my question for you, Andy, is Carlos Hyde came out of Ohio State. We know at this point he's a good early down back, and I think this is at worst, I think you made a lateral move from Isaiah Crowell, and you've probably gotten a little bit better. Can Hyde play on third downs? Because when he was coming out of Ohio State, it was sort of a, you know, here's a three down guy. You know, maybe he's not the kind of guy that you're, you know, using like Alvin Kamara or James White or something like that. But this is a guy who can catch the ball. You can put him out there on third down and do some things with him.
He can't, but you have Duke Johnson, so I don't know if you need him to. You obviously want flexibility, but they're basically trading Crowell, who signed for 3 years, $12 million with the Jets. They're trading him for Hyde, who signed for 3 years, $15 million with the Browns, and I think that upgrade is laudable. I think Hyde is that much better than Crowell and maybe even a bit more. I'll tell you this, Gary, and I'm not saying I believe this. Hyde's a better runner than people realize. Hyde has some subtleness to his running, and he can get to the edge more efficiently than you think every time. He always plays faster than he looks on film. There was someone I respect immensely who said to me last year, if we're talking just pure running ability, Carlos Hyde's better than Todd Gurley. And they were talking about both of those guys. They weren't saying it wasn't just a compliment to Hyde. They also think Todd Gurley's got some stiffness that gets masked, and Gurley overcomes it with other traits. But the greater point is, and we can get bogged down in the debate if you want, but the greater point is Carlos Hyde's a better pure runner than people realize. Certainly that. And there are some people who believe he's an elite pure runner.
That's high praise right there. Durability is an issue, too. You'll worry about that, though we did stay healthy last year.
Yeah, I like Hyde. I like him a lot. We talked about the Browns last week. I think what will be a big deal is how much you can scheme with those guys. And Hyde doesn't do a lot for you schematically, but then you go back, you have the Duke Johnson factor there. Ideally, though, you'd like to be able to have both those guys on the field together, and maybe you can if Johnson, you feel good about him going out to the slot. I don't know. We'll see how they mix and match it in Cleveland. But just to keep in the simplest terms, Carlos Hyde's a really good NFL runner.
All right. Browns also, by the way, added T.J. Carey to the secondary and number two tight end in Darren Fells. Running backs, Raiders have a couple of them now. They signed Doug Martin, and on top of that, it sounds like they're keeping Marshawn Lynch at this point, which would seem to be a bit redundant, but they're going to do it anyway. All right, another early down grinding back here. Doug Martin goes to the Raiders, and it seems like the Raiders are a little bit redundant here with their backs. Doug Martin, Marshawn Lynch is reportedly staying there. So, you know, John Gruden talks about rolling it back to the 90s. That's kind of the beginnings of a 90s offense.
Yeah, you could say that, I guess. Do you think, or at beginning of the season, Jalen Richard and DeAndre Washington both give you more in the third down game than either Lynch or Martin, which leads me to believe that one of those two will not be here once Labor Day hits.
You could be right. And then this whole conversation is null and void. But, you know, those other two guys are a little bit, it's like it's almost like you just do a two-way competition for the early down and then two-way competition for the third down. And I don't know if you really need to, well, I guess you'd keep Richard around to return kicks or something like that. But
I can't wait to see what John Gruden does offensively. I think that's one of the most fascinating storylines coming in into the NFL in quite some time.
Yeah, and I mean, look, they bring in Jordy Nelson as well. Michael Crabtree is out. Jordy Nelson is in. Obviously, Amari Cooper still there on the outside. I don't know if you feel great with the amount of risk in these guys. I mean, Amari Cooper and Jordy Nelson, those are two guys who, when they were at their worst last year, it was not very good at all. They're sort of guys with low floors, and if they both play at those floors, you're kind of in trouble with what you have in the passing game.
Well, here's how you get them to the floor. You play press man coverage, and that's the concern, is teams also know how to defend these guys, Nelson does not have great twitch or speed anymore. So I would imagine press coverage is a problem for him. And then Cooper, that's been evident on film for two seasons now, he does not get off press well. Once you give him some space, or once he creates space, which takes him too long, but once he does, he's very good in his transitional movement skills. But John Gruden, one of his tasks will be finding a way to force corners to play off coverage against these guys, because they're not going to handle press coverage very well. And one thing you can do, and it's been so long since Gruden's been in the league, I don't remember if he did this in Tampa much or not, but when you bring your wide receivers closer into the formation, kind of like what Sean McVay does, a Gruden protege and with the Rams, and those tight splits, one reason you align your receivers tight to the formation is it forces corners to back up and play off coverage. So maybe we see that as part of what Oakland does. And I'd say, well, you can't do that every snap, though. But McVay, who learned a lot from Gruden, he's been doing it almost every snap in Los Angeles as last season went along. So maybe you do. At the end of it, though, you still need a defensive coordinator, put it to me quite simply. You need wide receivers who can beat man coverage in the NFL, and you need corners who can play man coverage. And if you've got guys who cannot do that, then you need new guys. So they're not done at wide receiver in Oakland. They need someone else here, because I think Cooper's probably a number two and Nelson's probably a number three at this point. They're in the market for another wideout. When they get them this year, maybe, maybe not. They need one soon.
Yeah, probably don't get one in this draft class. I don't know who you'd get on the trade market at this point. Probably damaged goods.
It's hard. You can't have everything too. That's why those wide receivers cost a lot of money, because not everybody gets to have one. There's not very many of them.
Yeah. We'll see what happens in Oakland there. Before we move on, Andy. You know, Buffalo Wild Wings loves a Cinderella story. It's the tale of the underdog, the unexpected, and by their unexpected nature, you just can't predict when one is going to happen. It makes them great, but also makes them frustrating, because at any moment, you could miss that Cinderella sighting, unless you're spending March at B-Dubs, the official hangout for NCAA March Madness. Here, you'll catch every second of every game, and you'll be able to look back and tell the story of the team you watch climb their way from a low seed to the champions. But only if you go to Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Do you do the bracket, by the way, Andy? Do you do an NCAA bracket?
I used to love the NCAA tournament. It would come to Boise every 4 years. Some of the really great days of my life were going to those tournament games. I don't follow it anymore. I'm just too busy with football. And so if I filled out a bracket, I would be purely guessing, and I don't do that. But I do check the scores occasionally. I was interested enough to do that. But, you know, I didn't watch. Who was the team that won on the three-point buzzer a few years ago? Was that Villanova?
Wait. Oh, the championship. Yeah, I was going to say, like, that happens, like, dozens of times every year.
No.
Villanova beat Carolina on the Chris Jenkins hit the game winner there. Yeah.
So I woke up the next morning and saw that, because I'd been watching film or whatever I was doing the night before. And I saw the next morning and thought, boy, that would have been great to see, but I'm all right. And that told me right there, I'm never watching college basketball again, because if I can miss that kind of ending and feel okay about it the next day, then what's the point of watching?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, I grew up right by UConn. I'm a huge college basketball guy. I went to Syracuse. College basketball, the actual game, the finishes are exciting sometimes. The actual games are tough. It's a tough brand of basketball now. It's just not very
pretty. I agree.
But it is exciting. No,
if I'm going to watch, I'll watch the NBA if I'm watching any basketball. But I think I've told you, I watched every NBA playoff game 2 years ago. And I watched them on DVR. I'd get through them in 45 minutes at the end of the night. It was a blast. Springtime. I loved it. Kevin Durant goes and signs with Dirk Cutter. I had lunch with him, and he broke the news to me on the day before, I want to say day before 4th of July. He said, yeah. Dirk Cutter said, Durant's going to the Warriors. And as soon as he said that, I thought, why did I just watch all that then? What was the point of all that? They're just going to join forces at the end. Then why am I watching Oklahoma City push Golden State to the brink? What's the point? And I haven't watched the NBA since. And I know I'm in the minority, because I guess the ratings are up.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's kind of the off-season stuff that draws people in, and the NFL is getting a little bit of that now, I guess, with the hotter trade market this year and dudes moving around.
I don't understand. People just get caught up. I think people like that idea more. This hasn't been as good of a trade market as a few years ago when Jimmy Graham. Remember that day when Jimmy Graham got traded? Who else went on that day? There was like a Friday. I was at USC Leonard Williams Pro Day, and I went and sat down afterwards in the restaurant and checked Pro Football Talk. They do a nice job there. And I couldn't. It was like 7 or 8 mega stories all hit in the same day. Mega stories by NFL standards. This offseason has not been as crazy as past offseason. People just point. They want to paint it that way because there's more reaction to it now because fans have a greater appetite for it. But the players involved have not been stunning this year. There's been some good guys, but it's nothing unusual about this offseason so far.
I think it's a bigger volume of recognizable names, I think is what it comes down to.
That's all they are, though. They're names. Yes. They're just names.
Yep. But if you play fantasy football, you know when whatever Michael Crabtree and Jordy Nelson and Tyrod Taylor and some of these guys who maybe aren't stars and maybe aren't very effective players anymore, but you know them and they've been in places for a long time, and then your world changes and it's new and scary, and that's where the excitement comes from. But we briefly talked about Jordy there. Michael Crabtree ends up in Baltimore, so they scoop him up. They also got John Brown on I think one of the more underrated contracts of the offseason. They get John Brown. He's a durability risk. They just get him on a 1 year, $5 million deal. I mean that's a really good deal there. John Brown and Michael Crabtree. Those are your new guys for Flacco out there.
And individually, I'd say. This doesn't really change much. It doesn't move the meter. But together, I think that's a pretty good acquisition. It's not a great receiving core still. And Crabtree, for whatever reasons, had issues with drops recently, which is bizarre because he's always been a tremendous plucker of the ball. And he's a very pristine, mechanically precise route runner. He's not a great athlete. He's just such a polished player that he gets away with a lot of stuff. It hasn't been the same guy in recent years, though, and then he's having issues catching the ball, which is an issue if you're not a great athlete. But him opposite Brown, their styles complement each other really well. I don't know if doesn't it feel like Baltimore every year they're addressing the wide receiving unit somehow?
Yes, and they haven't done it particularly well. Obviously they missed on Breshad Perriman. The speedster that they took and just didn't really get anything out of him. Look, I don't want to pile on the guy, but they spent big on Ryan Grant, and then that deal got voided because he failed the physical, and Grant apparently was well enough to pass physicals elsewhere, and as his agent points out, if the season started next week, he would be on the field. And you kind of wonder if they felt a little bit of the reaction to that signing and were looking for a way to get out of it. Because Ryan Grant, the amount of money they gave him, was a really weird signing.
I had a Ravens coach call me and say, what do you think of Ryan Grant? And I said, I think he's as good as the system around him. I think he's as good as his surroundings. You're not going to – your offense doesn't change because you missed out on Ryan Grant. They'll be fine there. He's a nice player, but he's a plug-in wide receiver. He doesn't have anything dynamic or buildable to his skill set the way John Brown, a speedster, or Crabtree, a really good possession route runner. Those guys give you something to build around. Ryan Grant, you plug in, and the designs carry him.
Yeah. No, that's why it was so weird that they went after him so aggressively.
Yeah.
I thought that was one of the – when they – at that time when they had Grant and Brown signed and Grant got the huge deal and Brown got the one-year deal, it just felt like bizarro world. Hamburgers eating people. Didn't really make sense. More voided deals to discuss, by the way. We talked about this one. This made it into last week's show because it happened during our recording. But Breland is out in Carolina. He, I guess, had injured his foot on vacation and couldn't pass the physical with the Panthers. So he's back available again. And the Panthers, I guess, still have that sort of de-emphasis maybe on the secondary this year, but they did make some changes up front. Dontari Poe is in, stepping into the Lotulelei role, you would assume, and they bring back Julius Peppers, which everyone is happy about because Julius Peppers is a marvel at this point.
Interesting, they would pay for Poe, who did not come cheaply, didn't he get? I mean, he had a 3-year deal with sizable starter money, and they didn't pay to retain star Lotulelei.
Yeah, but Poe didn't get what Lotulelei got, right?
Well, what did Poe get? What was Poe? I was surprised at the number that Poe got.
Let's see, 3-year contract, worth about $27 million.
And yeah, Lotulelei, I thought that was big. Is it? It maybe Poe. I bet Poe's is a little more voidable than Lotulelei's.
Yeah,
3 years, $27 million is a lot to spend on a defensive tackle. If you play that out, that's a costly defensive tackle.
I don't know if he'll play that. I don't know if we'll play that out, and I would guess Lotulelei's deal, which is being quoted as a 5 years, $50 million with 13 guaranteed. Oh no, 13 signing bonus, 24.6 guaranteed. I would guess Lotulelei is going to be more around 3 for $30 million by the time it's all over. Most guys end up going 3 years, and will probably get somewhere in the 30 to 35 range. So you figure Poe won't get to that.
Yeah. I just was, I mean, would you agree Poe got more than you would have guessed? Did he get more than you would have guessed?
Yeah, I guess so. I wasn't shocked by it. I would say it's on the high side, if anything, but I also think it's kind of on the high side just because, I mean, there are so many quality defensive tackles out there. It's really, there's a surplus of them, so I don't know why you really go out of your way to spend on these guys.
Yeah.
What we've seen the last couple of years, but I didn't think that's eye popping money. I mean, that's what a low level like interior lineman, offensive lineman gets at this point. So, if you think he's a quality player, and you know some people are still buying into that, and he's all right. At worst, he's sort of like a mid level starter. So,
and as we're having this conversation, I earlier referred to Danny Shelton as a poor man's Dontari Poe. And that's probably sliding Shelton a bit. They're very similar guys. They're big,
yeah,
rotund body guys who play athletically and have light feet. And Shelton's a better lateral mover than Poe. So I like both of them, though. And I've always been a big Dontari Poe fan. I haven't quite felt that his performance matches his ability at all times, though.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think he's never, he came out with the freak label in the draft and, the stuff he did at the combine, and everyone was sort of getting really giddy about that.
Any defensive lineman who's the least bit athletic, people like to call him a freak. That's just a word people like to use. That doesn't mean anything.
He's really, he's huge, though. He's gigantic.
Yeah,
and he ran, a 4.8 40?
Yeah, it's just...
That's weird.
I don't think how many. They, not everybody can be a freak. How many freaks are actually out? Who's we call the freak gets used way too often.
Get overused. I think it is appropriate with Poe, though. With what, considering his combine performance, I think that is appropriate with Poe. I stand by it.
Mm-hmm.
The Vikings. The Vikings get Sheldon Richardson on a 1-year deal here. So. I think we kind of assume Richardson wouldn't get a long-term deal anywhere, but this is a talented player plugging into that line and sort of I mean, obviously they didn't miss Sharif Floyd badly last year, but this is a guy who kind of fits that mold.
Yeah, that's a good. They upgraded a defensive tackle, and I thought that was the one area because they were losing Shamar Stephen, who I like, and I apparently have overrated because I don't think he is signed anywhere, and I thought he'd be one of the more coveted defensive tackles in free agency. They were losing him, and I think Johnson as well, wasn't he going out of Minnesota? So they've got a little bit of a hole there that they fill with a potentially Pro Bowl caliber player.
Yeah. Nice move there. And they also they traded for Trevor Siemian here to be obviously their number two behind Kirk Cousins. And, people have been asking in the office like, oh, yeah, people are trading for Trevor Siemian, because everyone went to Northwestern who works in media. People are trading for Trevor Siemian, and Trevor Siemian is – he gets paid nothing. And, you know, he's if you're talking about like sort of a mid-level backup, yeah, he's probably that. And the fact that you're going to pay him like $1 million next year, not bad at all. So these backups are getting like $5 million now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good price for – and I think that's a good situation. And can you believe – and I'm sure lots of people have said this – Trevor Siemian wound up backing up Kirk Cousins after all, and neither of them are in Mile High.
I know. Speaking of backup quarterbacks, Chase Daniel to the Bears. He's getting like $5 million a year to be a backup for the Bears. But
right.
The Bears
See,
also
– This is where the show ends. We just bumped into the annual Chase Daniel signing. We're done. We're out.
But the Bears did. They retained Kyle Fuller and Prince Amukamara. We wonder that about them. They kept that secondary together. So you get a healthy Leonard Floyd, and maybe we're bullish on that Vic Fangio defense was again this year. Pretty good.
Yeah, because the NFL's bullish on it. It's a well coached defense. Those corners fit it well. Fuller, interesting that a division rival went after him hard and jacked up his price, elevated his price for Chicago, and then they rose and answered it. That tells you everything you need to know about Kyle Fuller. They felt that his solid, very solid 2017 season was legitimate.
And the Cardinals end up getting two guys on the offensive line. Should have mentioned Justin Pugh during the Giants conversation earlier. Justin Pugh gets out of New York. He's in Arizona now, presumably as a guard. And then they get Andre Smith in there as, I don't know, maybe you plug him in at right tackle again to see what happens. But doing some things to solidify that front five.
And it needed the help, and Pugh also gives them some flexibility. So when you have multiple needs along your offensive line, finding a flexible guy helps you because you have more chances to fill those needs if something goes awry.
Also, Mike Glennon, backup quarterbacks. We've covered a lot of backup quarterbacks now at the end of the show.
We have. We have, I think, and that you and I had this argument. I think that means the show's expired. Backup QBs, at some point you have to draw the line.
It kind of does. We're going to do the mailbag show. If you have backup quarterback questions, you're in luck because we have a mailbag show coming up next week. We're going to do it regardless. Even if there's big news, we'll do the big news at the top of the show, then we'll get to the mailbag. If there's no big news, we'll just do one big mailbag. But send the questions, talkback@themmqb.com, Twitter, Andy_Vinoy, gremling_si, or we're both on Facebook. You can get us there, but send those questions in. We'll be talking about them, and we got a couple of guys. Sue, Eric Reed, a couple of safeties still kicking around out there. Morgan Burnett, couple quality guys still left on the market here. So stuff still happening. But for now, thanks as always to producers Shelby Royston and Lou Pellegrino, as well as editor Chris Basil, all the guys at Haynes 13 who always make us sound good. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Like I said, send the mailbag questions. If you want to do us a solid, go onto Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. That helps other people find the show. If you ever have any feedback, let us know. We love hearing from you. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB podcast with Peter King, and this podcast, the MMQB 10 Things podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week. As regulation has officially expired on our podcast and there's no overtime in sight, I'll spare you the agony of more sports jokes. However, nothing hits the spot like some shut-eye after playing or attending a sporting event, and we think the same goes for listening to us talk about it. So let Mattress Firm help you drift off to dreamland. Simply put, your budget stretches further at Mattress Firm. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to learn how you can turn your sleep into a true slam dunk.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.